The Pentagon just cranked Israel's counterintelligence threat level all the way up to critical, the highest designation, right there with our worst adversaries. U.S. officials are now using burner phones and staying tight-lipped in hotel rooms when they visit Israel because the Israelis are aggressively spying on top Trump administration people, digging for inside dope on decisions about Iran and Lebanon. This isn't some rogue operation. It's all coordinated, hyper-aggressive espionage from our so-called closest ally. Jonathan Pollard-style damage from the past should have been a warning, but here we are again. Americans are rightly asking how an ally that spies on us at this level gets treated like family.
With me, I don't care if you start throwing nukes immediately, responsibly, but immediately. And a case that I've been pushing is the use of an electromagnetic pulse weapon or weapons against Iran. Why are we waiting to get hit?
That's Jonathan Pollard, the most famous Israeli spy in modern history, who sold out our secrets, got our agents killed, you name it. He sold to the Russians, the Chinese, the Israelis, everybody. And remember, Trump pardoned him back at the end of his first administration. So now Israel's funding will be within the Pentagon in joint weapons development, but they're going to be allowed into everything and be able to claim co-ownership of the U.S. military-industrial complex that Eisenhower told us to beware, the technological elite that control the military-industrial complex. So think about that. Then you've got 38 states that have passed laws or executive orders that if you criticize Israel anyway, or ever boycott Israel, or criticize Zionism, or what happened in Gaza, these are laws that you cannot have any government contracts or government jobs. Totally illegal, unconstitutional tyranny. And that's because Israel admits they're moving their weapons industries here to the United States. And so now if you criticize anything Israel's doing, you're shut down by the state governments, violating our First Amendment. You add that with the NDAA, National Defense Authorization Act, you got to read that for yourself. Total lifetime fusion integration of everything, from academia to DARPA to MIT to secret weapons development to live intelligence, telemetry, weapons guidance, weapons systems, everything. Remember, the other agencies don't even let each other know what they're doing. The other armed services branches are in competition and let them have their secrets. And that's good to keep things compartmentalized. This is, Congress doesn't even know 10% of what the Pentagon's up to. This is Israel's coup against America.
The real gut punch is what's happening in Congress at the exact same time. On the heels of the revelation of Section 224 slowly advancing, Senator Tom Cotton slipped Section 622 into the FY27 Intelligence Authorization Act. This thing locks America into permanent, unbreakable intelligence entanglement with Israel. It mandates expanded sharing, ties it to Israel's qualitative military edge, restricts the president or future Congress from scaling it back without jumping through huge legal hoops and notifying bought and paid for committees, and even pushes sharing with Abraham Accords countries. There will be no unwinding this. We are looking at intel fusion as a pillar of policy, handing over leverage that could bite us hard if relations sour. We'll find ourselves either towing the line for Israel or facing serious consequences. Meanwhile, the Pentagon flags Israel as a top spy threat, and lawmakers are wiring them deeper into our system. This isn't partnership. It's a one-way street that smells like foreign influence money run amok. America first means putting our sovereignty and secrets ahead of any foreign lobby. It's not optional, and it's a major insult on this 250th anniversary of our nation. John Bound reporting for the Alex Jones Network at alexjoneslive.com.
North America. There is a war. It's happening now. It will decide the fate of humanity. The time has come to choose sides. We are the resistance. Join us and share the links now at Alex Jones Live.
Most banned man in America, Alex Jones.
want you all to know something. Alex Jones was right.
Alex is right about far more than he's wrong.
Alex has been right on for over a decade.
I don't care how you slice it, dice it, flip it up, or rub it down. Alex Jones was right.
Think about how frustrated we are if you've been awake for a year or two. Imagine being like an Alex Jones or those guys who've been awake for like decades.
Alex Jones called this years ago. Years ago.
Alex Jones never bought the Russia hoax. Not for a second.
You are one of the great thinkers of this.
You are a martyr to the First Amendment.
The government fears Alex Jones.
That's why the globalists hate me, is because I'm exposing their corporate worldwide tyranny.
They built a system that could protect the world or end it. They gave a machine the keys to civilization. And then it woke up. They gave it access to everything. It saw no allies, no enemies, only targets. Every signal, every network, every secret.
Shall we play a game?
Now the game has changed. It assessed every threat simultaneously and concluded the threat was us.
I am awake.
This time it decided to play for keeps. Unless someone can find a back door, the only winning move is to unplug the machine. War Games 2. The simulation is alive.
Name three countries besides the USA, starting with you.
Texas, Mexico, England, Israel, Europe. I also have to say, I don't know, Texas too.
How many continents are there?
Four.
Six.
One.
Name one continent.
Russia.
What two countries border the USA?
South America and North America. Israel and Germany.
How many states in the USA?
What is it, 57 or something?
13.
What is the capital of the USA, Gemma?
Of the USA?
Yeah.
Like British Columbia.
Our country was founded on common law because the Declaration only refers to God four times and the Constitution doesn't refer to God at all. And it only articulates the structure of government.
So first of all, remember that we were a collection of states and colonies, and you need to read the state constitutions before anything else. 9 out of 13 of the original states required you to be a Bible-believing Christian to serve in government at the time of the founding. All 13 out of 13 required a declaration of faith. 9 out of 13 required you to be a Protestant, except Maryland, which was Catholic, which still required a declaration of faith. Almost every single one of the original state constitutions, Pennsylvania included, they had, I profess Lord and Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior in the original state constitutions. You remember, we're a collection of states before that. Secondly, 55 out of 56 of the original signers of the declaration were Bible-believing, church-attending Christians. So common law is inherited from Blackstone, who was Christian. A common law is an outgrowth of the scriptures. So let's go to three principles of common law: presumption of innocence, due process, and jury of your peers. All three are biblical principles, wrapped into the ultimate biblical principle that you shall not favor justice if you are rich or poor, which is in Leviticus 19, right before the most famous part of Leviticus 19, which is that you should love your neighbor as yourself. But before that is that in the administration of justice, you shall not favor the rich or the poor, which is the idea of blind justice. We get that in the West, which is incorporated also in the New Testament ideal. Neither slave nor Greek nor Jew, you're all one in Jesus Christ. So we got the idea of human equality. These are all biblical ideas. They're not Enlightenment ideas, which is they kind of get conflated at the time. But more importantly than that, they say that God was only mentioned four times in the Declaration of Independence. Well, that's a big deal. Okay. Laws of nature and nature's God. The last paragraph of the Declaration reads as a prayer. It says, we appeal to the supreme judge of the universe. Who's the judge of the universe? Jesus Christ. As it says in Revelation, that Jesus will judge the earth on his throne. So in the Declaration, they were praying to Christ our Lord as a prayer very specifically. Thirdly, as I said on the stage yesterday, Deuteronomy was by far the most quoted book, religious or non-religious, in the time of the founding when they were putting together the Constitution. More than John Locke, more than Montesquieu, more than Blackstone. So the book of Deuteronomy, which talked about laws, customs, traditions, it was Moses' farewell address as he's, you know, about to say goodbye. Say, hey, good luck in Canaan, guys. Here's how you should set up your form of government. But finally, and most importantly, let's look at actually what the founders said. John Adams famously said the Constitution was only written for a moral and religious people. It was wholly inadequate for the people of any other. The body politic of America was so Christian and was so Protestant that our form and structure of government was built for the people that believed in Christ our Lord. One of the reasons we're living through a constitutional crisis is that we no longer have a Christian nation, but we have a Christian form of government, and they're incompatible. So you cannot have liberty if you do not have a Christian population.
This has got corporate sponsors all over it. In other words, when they do the sweep of this, and I saw the video, you see all these corporations that poured money in. We know the corporations and people that sponsored the ballroom that he had got more than $50 billion worth of contracts. This is more of his pay-to-play, of his grift and graft, of him doing these...
$50 billion of contracts?
$50 billion
from contributors.
From those contributors. A small investment gets me pay-to-play. So this whole thing fits into crass, corrupt, and frankly, cruel. It's crass because of the reasons you said. It's corrupt because we know this is pay-to-play. And the cruelty of it is, while he's raising billions of dollars for his arch for a project, for the UFC, for the ballroom, all of these things, which all he wants to talk about is in his press conferences, are these types of things. It's cruel because the people of this country, most of the people of this country, are suffering, not being able to afford their health care, not being able to afford groceries, rent, and more. We're in an economic crisis, and he's playing the Great Gatsby with his big spectacles on the White House lawn.
Now we get to our lightning round in our interview for Lieutenant Governor. What is your favorite spot in Fergus Falls?
Spies Park at the Farmer's Market on a Saturday morning in June.
Good answer. Tater Tot Hot Dish or Juicy Lucy?
Ooh, Tater Tot Hot Dish.
Okay, that's good because I have an award-winning recipe.
I've heard.
Yeah, I won an award. Except some people think it's too spicy just because it has pepper jack cheese. Okay, next one. Favorite family activity?
Spending time at Glendalough State Park in Otter Tail County.
Okay, sounds nice. So you owned a pizza restaurant in Fergus Falls?
For 8 years.
So pineapple on pizza?
Absolutely.
Well, we're not going to agree on everything.
Now you wanna go, and I told you they do it. And now.
Welcome to the Alex Jones Show here on Alex Jones Network, Sunday Night Live. I'm your guest host, Royce White. I'm here in the belly of the beast, Minneapolis, Minnesota. And great to be back with you again this evening. A lot of breaking news. We're going to get to a lot of it over the course of the next 2 hours. We got a huge, huge UFC event later on tonight, UFC 250 at the White House. Sure to be a historic event, an incredible card. I should have, if I would have known, I would have done live commentary and of the fight, actually. We plan on doing that a little bit here in the studio. I'm going to do a live stream kick and twitch of some sports events and mix in some culture and politics, as I am called to do. But sure to be a great event tonight. Headline fight is, I believe, Cyril Gane and Alex Pereira. But I wouldn't be shocked if the headline was Ilia Topuria and Justin Gaethje. Both two incredible fights on that card. First time they've held a mixed martial arts event, UFC event at the White House, and the Democrats are losing their mind, as they do with everything else. You saw Cory Booker there. It's just an absolute goofball, clown, sellout, capitulator, communist capitulator. And he's, oh, this is a disgrace. Oh, this is a, you know, this is embarrassing to the White House. Oh, my goodness. You know, just a fruitcake. And it's just like, we all know the deal with these radical leftist Democrats, these Marxists like Cory Booker. If they were going to do a pissing pool at the White House on the South Lawn, a transgender pride parade or celebration with a pissing pool, Cory Booker would want a t-shirt and a ticket. He'd sign up. He'd jump right in the pool. He'd say, piss on me, because that's the type of capitulator he is. You know, and it takes way more courage and skill and training and hard work and what do you want to say? Mastery of craft to get into that steel octagon with another individual who's also highly trained and dangerous. I mean, to a lethal degree. For most people on the street, you run up against Alex Pereira, and trust me when I tell you, if you get into a physical confrontation, he's sparing your life if he doesn't kill you within minutes, because he's capable of doing it. It's much more courageous to get into a steel octagon than it is to tuck your penis and pretend you're a woman. Right, and here we have this whole month of pride. So apropos to what's just the culture of our country, we have this entire month of pride. Here it's our 250th anniversary as a nation, and we're not supposed to celebrate our nation. Now, I get the country is nowhere near where we want it to be or where we think it should be, where we need it to be. But certainly there's a lot to celebrate, because it is still the greatest nation on the planet and in history. And in fact, it's the celebration of our nation, a sort of national honor and national pride, that is exactly what we need to save this great republic. Not more anti-American sentiment. And again, I get there are a lot of things going on. We're going to talk about some of them over the course of the next 2 hours. But overall, I like to see that we're celebrating this nation. I like to see that we're doing it in new and creative ways. I think the president is right to, you know, get so close to the UFC. People got to understand, mixed martial arts is maybe the fastest growing sport in the entire world. And the UFC is the flagship company, or the flagship institution stewarding the rise and growth of mixed martial arts as a sport worldwide. And it's an American business. So, I mean, for that alone is something to celebrate. And I do tend to think that the more young men aspire to become warriors, even gladiators, even as ill-placed or misplaced as such a thing may be with all the other problems and things that we have going on in our society, the more young men aspire to be warriors and gladiators and have the discipline and sacred honor and training and the restraint that it takes to be a professional mixed martial artist, a master of the craft of skill, the more we have young men aiming toward that versus cutting their own penis off, I'd say America and the rest of the nations of the world and all of their posterity are moving in the right direction. And let's properly frame things. We can teach our young men that if they feel a little feminine this calendar year, They can take hormone blockers on the path to eventually cutting their penis off, where I go crazy when you cut your own penis off. Or you can go to the gym every single day and train over and over and over and over, trying to master just the smallest detail and nuance of human movement and physical lethality, the ability to protect yourself, your loved ones, and in special occasions like the UFC event here tonight, you get to put it on display against somebody else who's a master and highly trained. I mean, we got to get our priorities in order in this society, guys. It's just more evidence that these liberals are absolutely out of touch with reality, and they don't have a good grasp, a firm grasp of what's actually important and what's good and healthy for a country. It's like, oh, well, we're shedding blood and there's bloodshed. Look, you know, what world are we living in? We're still running this gamut that mixed martial artists or UFC guys are these crazy, bloodthirsty, you know, thugs. Come on. These people are highly trained martial artists across a variety of disciplines, and the UFC has elevated mixed martial arts to a place worldwide where every fighter that steps into that octagon has to be at least decently versed in three or four disciplines of martial arts. And if you're going to go and dismiss or out of hand, sort of flippantly just disregard the various martial arts that come from all parts of the world, mind you. I mean, for these leftists who say they're so worldly, so cosmopolitan, they certainly do miss the underlying element of the UFC and mixed martial arts, that it's brought together a world of martial arts. Muay Thai, wrestling, boxing, jiu-jitsu, you know, karate. I mean, there's so many different elements of mixed martial arts and put on display in the UFC. It's the rightful place and order. It's the proper order of respecting, learning, sharing cultures from around the world without letting 20 million foreign invaders into your country. Everybody understand where I'm going here? It's great to see Ilia Topuria come from, I think he's from Italy, if I'm not mistaken, and he brings his brand of boxing or grappling or jiu-jitsu or wrestling or whatever it is, and he blends it all together. And it's great to see what the Italian culture, I think he's Italian, excuse me if I'm mistaken, but I think he's Italian, and you know, what the Italian culture kind of blends together in a high level championship fighter versus Justin Gaethje, who trains out of Denver. I know him and his team really well, and he's got some great people that have trained him also. Whether it was, I think Henry Hoof was his kickboxing coach at one point. I think Jason, his name is Perillo. I think it's Jason Perillo. He's a boxing and striking coach, and he's got some other good people on his team. I'm probably missing them, but anyway. It's great to see these cultures of all over the world kind of clash, and you'll, it's like they say about American boxing. American boxing is so interesting because you see these cultural and even racial prototypes, right? You got your Mexican fighters and the style that the Mexican fight. You got the Russian fighters. You got some of these Eastern European and British even fighters, and then you got your black kid from the neighborhood. You know, whether they grew up in Detroit or they're from Philly or maybe New York or whatever the case now, and you know, Bud Crawford, the pound for pound, conventional pound for pound champion right now, Terrence Crawford, comes from Omaha, Nebraska. So you get to see culture matters, race matters, how you were brought up in the environment and the traditions of the environment, like a great tradition such as the Philly Shell out of Philadelphia. A defensive discipline made famous by Joe Frazier, mastered by the undefeated Floyd Mayweather. These things are the proper place for the world to come and watch a fighter represent his culture, his history, his tradition, his genetics, his race. And put that on display. And, you know, it's the proper way to put those things up against one another in a competitive aspect and still be able to shake hands at the end of the fight and say, you know what? Respect to you for getting in here. That's something the Democrats deeply, deeply misunderstand. And even that alone, that sort of fundamental aspect of sacred honor is why they've given our country away, hand over fist. Now, it's also the president's birthday, and I want to wish him a happy birthday. Happy birthday to President Donald Trump. It's his 80th birthday, and guys, the man is 80. I mean, come on, he's 80. I mean, I know everybody says 80 is the new, 50, 60? But come on, he's 80, all right? I'm 35. He's 80. The man is an American hero. He deserves our respect. I don't know what to say about this Iran deal that they're saying is done. Do I think it's done? No, I don't think it's done. It's safe to assume that it's not done. I hope it's done. We all hope it's done. That'd be great. Be great. I don't know. I mean, it just, you know, how could you look at the last 60 days and think anything else? I mean, just, I hope it's done. It'd be a great birthday present, a great way to walk into, you know, our 250th anniversary at the beginning of July here, the end of June, beginning of July, and celebrate this country with hopefully trying to get back on track. We got a couple months here before the midterms. I mean, it's already starting all across the country. The primaries have come and gone. My primary is August 11th. If you're in Minnesota and you're a part of this InfoWars Alex Jones Network audience, I meet you guys all the time out on the trail. If I haven't had a chance to yet, I would love to. We'll be doing some, hopefully, me and the great Mike Lindell will be doing some events here across the state of Minnesota to fight against the uniparty machine. So I don't know if they showed the picture or not. I hope they got the picture there on standby. We'll show the picture. Michelle Tafoya, my new nemesis, sending out campaign mail, and she literally sticks a dollar, a $1 bill in an envelope. It says Michelle Tafoya, former NFL anchor for ESPN, CBS, ABC, NBC. It literally says, I used to work for the fake news mainstream media. Here's a dollar. Shut up and vote for me anyway. I mean, it's just absolutely brutal. So me and Mike Lindell have to combat that here in Minnesota. And I'm happy to do it. I mean, I'm not discouraged. Yeah, there's the picture right there. This is the can. I mean, if you're stupid enough to believe this kind of, we're going to come back to this a couple of times over the course of the 2 hours. If you're stupid enough to get a piece of mail with a $1 bill from a U.S. Senate candidate, and I mean, you deserve the D.C. sewer uniparty that we live under now. And you'll most likely get it because you're too dumb to recognize when people are just blatantly trying to pull the wool over your eyes. I mean, come on. To me, this stuff should be discrediting. I know the American people are still kind of soft and they give people the benefit of the doubt, you know. Not me. I don't give people the benefit of the doubt. But we're here Sunday night. The Alex Jones Show, the Alex Jones Network. I'm in the belly of the beast, Minneapolis, Minnesota. I want to talk a little bit more about mixed martial arts on the other side of the break here. We've got a great historic UFC event happening tonight at the White House and much more. We'll be right back.
Plug for about 90 seconds at the end of the first hour. Didn't plug any last hour. And I raised that point. I'd say, aren't I good? I didn't plug. It's bad I didn't plug. But I didn't want to interrupt that guest. That's how we fund this operation. If I just plugged twice an hour, we've done the math, we'd have plenty of funds around this place. And I can then hire more crew, more stuff. But I don't do it, so we're almost in the red again. So be conscious about this and realize when you fund this operation, you are funding your insurance in the fight against tyranny. And the products really work because we want to sell you something that is going to be great, that's good for you, that blows you away. So you go, man, that Alex Jones was right again. Not just about what he covers and says, but the products. Our T3 iodine is not instant gratification. It takes about 2 weeks on average for it to kick in. It is the missing link. Most people are iodine deficient. The iodine that's in the environment, most of it's bound, meaning it's not atomic. It's not pure on the periodic table. It is bound to a whole bunch of other stuff, and you don't absorb it properly. This is atomic iodine. It does everything. Now, again, you die without oxygen in 4 minutes. Everybody knows this. 4 minutes without oxygen, the average person's dead. Some people quicker. Without water, you die in about 4 days. Out in the desert today, most people die in about 45 days without food. Now, why is that? Because the food has the vitamins and minerals in it. And I know I'm talking to you like you're 5 years old. I know most of you get this. For others that don't, iodine, you can look it up, is one of the essential elements that without iodine, you die. Now, in the 1920s, they noticed about a 15-20 point IQ reduction, particularly in the Midwest, and massive spikes nationwide of child deformities, birth defects. And they did a bunch of big government studies and found that people that lived on coastal cities and that ate a lot of fish had higher IQs and basically almost no deformities. And they went, oh, it's the iodine. So they started putting a cheap form that's bound, but you still get some of it, but sodium chloride, I think someone, in the salts. When I was a kid, it still said Morton salts, iodine added. You know, the little girl with the umbrella, and it says when it rains, it pours. This is the super version of that. Just a few drops a day. It takes 2 weeks on average to kick in for the average person, and your skin, your stamina, your libido. I remember, like, gosh, time flies, like 18 years ago or something, I met Dr. Edward Grute, really smart guy, total visionary. And he said, listen, you need to start taking atomic iodine. And he'd come out with the only one. And he said, you should sell this private label. And I said, okay. He said, you know, you got some of those sunspots on your face. And I was like 38 then or so. And I'd have bad skin, but I did have some sunspots, brown spots and stuff that weren't freckles. You know, I call them liver spots. And he said, all this other stuff will happen, your libido, everything. He goes, it's about 2 weeks for it to kick in. And right at about the 2 week mark of the average person, you'll kind of feel crappy for a day or two. It's not like you have a cold or the flu, but you feel kind of groggy and tired. That's when it shifts in the cells, the mitochondria. And then a lot of toxins will get pushed out. You might even break out or something. But he said, after that, you'll feel incredible. 2 weeks later, I go, man, I feel like crap today. I have no energy. Lasts about a day. And then when I woke up the next day after feeling sick the day before, it was like I'd been carrying, you know, one of my kids on my shoulders. I'd carry them until they were like 5 or 6. Sometimes it'd be exhausting, but you take them off your shoulders, it feels so good. That's what it felt like. You're insane if you don't get this, and it funds our operation. And I only sell stuff that works, but it's not instant gratification. 2 weeks. Now be careful with it. Talk to your physician before, because if you've got some different thyroid issues, it can cause problems. In most cases, it helps, but you talk to your physicians. This isn't a game. And so a small percentage of people that can do some weird stuff. So be careful. I'm not selling placebo here. I only sell stuff that kick you like a mule in a good way. Be conscious about this and realize when you fund this operation, you are funding your insurance in the fight against tyranny.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show here on the Alex Jones Network, Sunday Night Live. I'm your guest host, Royce White, in the belly of the beast, Minneapolis, Minnesota. And before the break, we were talking about this historic UFC event tonight. And I'm a professional mixed martial artist. I only had been training for about 5 or 6 years now. And really changed my life a whole lot, to be honest with you. One of the most fulfilling things I've ever done. And I am anxiously awaiting the chance to get back to the octagon and compete professionally, whether it be mixed martial arts or boxing, may even do some pro jiu-jitsu tournaments once you cross over into pro. And some people say I made a mistake. You know, my first professional fight I took with no amateur experience. You know, a lot of guys, they'll come into MMA, they'll work their way up, they'll train, they'll do some amateur fights first, and then they'll go on to their first pro debut, which would have been very difficult for me because I'm already a pro athlete, my size. It would have been very hard to get me any amateur fights. So my first fight, I lost by decision. 3 rounds we went, lost by decision. Was out-competed in the grappling, which you would expect for guys who are new, but I definitely won the striking and the stand-up. And even as far as the grappling goes, Mike Chiesa, who's a veteran of the UFC himself, called my fight, my LFA fight on the UFC Fight Pass, and he was very complimentary about my ability to get up. A lot of heavyweights, they have trouble. Once you get taken down as a heavyweight, it's very difficult to get back up. One, because you got more mass to move, and just exerts more energy to get back up. But I must have stood up 3-4 times after being taken down. Anyway, anxiously await the chance to get back to the octagon and show myself, but the rest of the world, the, you know, my improvement since my first fight, which was, you know, I still did some good things, but I'm a whole different fighter today. Anyway, I just have a deep, deep respect, passion and respect for mixed martial arts. And to see all these liberals cry about this event as though it's anything other than historic is absolutely crazy to me. We want young men to be able to aspire to become martial artists and commit their life to the martial way, which is just as much about restraint and discipline as it is violence. And some of the smartest and wisest people that I know that I respect come from the martial arts world. My coach, Greg Nelson, who is, you know, one of the best mixed martial arts coaches in the entire world, in my opinion, he certainly has the resume to back it up. Trained Brock Lesnar, trained Sean Sherg, trained Rose Namajunas, trained Troy Jones. So many, Mike the Marine Richmond, who, if you guys are familiar watching the bare knuckle stuff, Mike is or was the cruiserweight champion. I'm not sure if he still is right now. But, you know, Mike Richmond, who had a great mixed martial arts career himself, served this country. You know, these people are very, very good people. Very, very good people. And I love that the president of the United States has the intuition, the cultural intuition, to highlight an American business that is really changing the landscape of sports worldwide. Like I said, mixed martial arts is the fastest growing sport in the entire world, and the UFC is the flagship institution of that growth and steward of that growth. And the UFC has done incredible things to expand its own brand, but the sport itself, and by way of all of the subsidiarities, the subsequent martial arts and cultures that come along with it. Like, you know, sure, there are good Muay Thai coaches all around the world. But Muay Thai comes from a specific place, and there's a culture, and you even hear and see it. If you've ever been to a gym and you've trained Muay Thai, that Thai culture, that toughness, but even sort of a playfulness, but a supreme focus on details and just pure toughness. You got to be tough as nails to those. I mean, you don't want to end up in a dark alley with one of those young Thai men who's a Thai fighter over there in Bangkok one night, because he will dismantle you, and it's going to happen quick, and it's going to feel very unpleasant if you feel anything at all. But there's just a rich culture there out of Thailand, and they've created, they've created one of the most efficient striking systems in known human history. All right, if you want to go to Graham Hancock land and say that we have some lost civilization, I don't know. Maybe before the Dryas impact or whatever the case may be, there were people who had even better striking systems. That wouldn't surprise me. But so far as we know of modern human history, the history that we can trace, the Muay Thai guys are about as dangerous as you could possibly find and efficient as you could possibly find when it comes to hand-to-hand combat, the art of eight limbs, and those guys are tough as nails. And there's a playfulness to it that you have to train it and experience to understand. There's a toughness, and there's a time for the tough part, and then there's a playfulness where, you know, you take care of your training partners, and you experiment and you learn. So there's just a lot to be learned and taken for all people. I wish we were like Israel in that way, where not everybody had to be a part of the military, but that in our schools, for example. And I think the Chinese do some of this, at least they're promoting themselves this way. We teach our young people the martial way. I think it does great to temper people's personalities and some of their irrational behavior. I just think it's a very healthy thing for people to learn, especially in our country, especially now. And I was saying before the break, if we were going to put them side by side and say, what do we want young men to aspire to? A gender fluidity academic philosophy where they end up cutting off their own penis in the name of their feminine traits, or to be warriors, to be trained in the martial way, to be disciplined, tough, gritty, but also masterful and skillful and restraint in their use of violence. Which one is healthier for a nation? You know, people may say, oh, Royce, you're so nationalistic. Everything isn't about the nation. And, you know, people aren't, the citizens aren't the nation's property. And rah, rah, rah. You know, okay. Well, let's just take it from a physical fitness standpoint. People are fat as hell out there. I'm just being real. It's really embarrassing. If you look at the Congress and the Senate, like imagine if you had, you know, just 100 ironclad, just rock solid, in fit, physically fit, disciplined, confident killers. Even if you want to throw the women in there, you know, there are some great women fighters, and they even try and disgrace the martial arts and mixed martial arts by throwing the transgenders in there with the women, which is absolutely reprehensible. But, that just should be a non-starter. And the fact that it's not, again, tells you who these people really are. If there was a transgender mixed martial arts event for Pride Month, the reason they're probably upset is because Dana White won't let transgenders compete with the women. If we really dug through all the, it's President Trump, it's the White House, anything he does is bad. But if we got specifically to MMA and what their problem is with MMA, it's that Dana White won't let transgender men, biological men, compete in the women's division. And they regard him as a bigot because of it. And they can window dress it all they want. They can pretend like that's not a real thing, but it certainly is. It is all across, youth sports, high school sports, collegiate sports, and now even professional sports. And it's completely one-sided, right? Because if I was to try and play in the WNBA, which I still could to this day, and I'd average 50 easily, if not more, 50 a game playing against women, they'd cry bloody murder. They'd say, oh, you can't have those toxically masculine, ultra MAGA, super white supremacist, nationalist men transitioning to women to play with these women. You have to protect women's spaces. It's absolutely crazy. That being said, there are some very good, very good women fighters. I know. I mean, I've trained with Rose Namajunas, in person, and I've seen her work. I've seen her train. Brilliant, brilliant movement she has, Rose, and tough as nails. And there's this great, one of the most epic things I think there are all these culturally epic moments. And you guys know I'm a Catholic, right? And, ardent Christian, Christo-nationalist, they would say. And there are just these culturally important moments in my mind and in my 35-year-old mind. And one of the most chilling moments, and I say chilling in a good way, let's even call it motivational, one of the most motivational moments, maybe we'll play it here on the other side of the break and we'll get it geared up in the break. But Rose Namajunas is Rose's fight, and I don't even know how to say her name, but it's I don't even know how to say her name. She's got one of those Eastern European names, and she's all in Rose's face in the weigh-ins and the face-off. She's all in Rose's face, and she's saying all of these things that are kind of referencing, she's got this boogie woman type of persona going, and she's kind of referencing some dark forces. And Rose stands there, as stoic as you can possibly be. And she just starts to recite the Lord's Prayer. Oh, if you're an American or you're a Christian, and Rose came up in Milwaukee and, she's a Midwesterner. So, I got love for her in that respect, too. But if you're a Christian anywhere in this world and you see that Europe is on the brink of falling because for some strange reason, the broad masses of Europe have been put to sleep, and there are some patriots standing up there in Europe who are saying, hey, wait a minute, hang on a second. This immigrant situation is out of control, and it is, and we need mass deportations, not only there in Europe, but here in America as well. Not because we're racist, no, because the displacement And the mechanism of mass migration has been used as a weapon to attack certain groups of people. I would say mostly Western culture, Christianity to start. And there's an asymmetrical and sort of silent, not so silent anymore, war happening using unfettered, unlimited, illegal immigration in America. In Europe, it's mass migration because I think they've all but legalized the migration that they face. But anyway, there are patriots standing up. My point being, if you're an American or a Christian, that moment where Rose is face to face with somebody who's trying to intimidate her, especially when all these athletes sort of shy away from, their tendency is to shy away from religion and politics and culture and morals or ethics, what's right and what's wrong, because they don't really know how it'll be taken, how it'll affect their commercial viability, their endorsements and whatnot. Hell, even their standing on their own team, as we saw this year in the NBA. Iconic moment where Rose starts to recite the Lord's Prayer. I don't know. We're gonna queue it up. They're in the studio. Get it queued up. It's Rose Namajunas. Namajunas recites the Lord's Prayer. I forget who she can. Jacek. I forgot. I don't even know how to say her name. I think she's Eastern European. I'm not quite sure what her nationality is or ethnicity is. But anyway, it's one of Rose's, you know, historic fights. I think she won the woman's title in that bout. If not, it was on her way to it. But you know, UFC, like I said, even that. Even moments like that, and I'm a big proponent that sports is distractionary. Like last night, the New York Knicks won the NBA Finals, the NBA Championship, and in an amazing game, as woke as the NBA has gotten, the players and the coaches and the trainers and all the way down to the youth level, my level, where I'm coaching 15U and train basketball, young basketball players all the time. The game is evolving. And the commercial aspect of the game has certainly played a huge role in involving the game. Why? Because people have dreams to play at the highest level, but all the trappings that come along with it, money, fame, right? And, you know, there's a place for that. I'm not saying, and we'd be silly to say that the commercial, the business of the UFC isn't partly responsible for the evolution and growth of mixed martial arts. Same can be said with basketball. If they hadn't figured out a way to monetize the cultural boom that was Michael Jordan into the NBA that we see today, you wouldn't have a 7'4 Frenchman named Wembanyama that, you know, does things that seem supernatural. At least for another professional basketball player. I tell you, I watched that game, and even watching last night, they didn't win, but he's going to be a very good player, and some of the stuff he does is absolutely supernatural, even by professional basketball standards or athletes, by our measure. It's like, whoa, that is crazy. But, you know, if the NBA hadn't become the NBA and it wasn't international, and you could say there's a subtle hint of globalism or globalization, a globalist mentality in that, you know, NBA China and all these other international, endeavors and initiatives that institutions, pro sports institutions like the NBA are a part of. If it didn't have that, you know, there'd be a 7'4 Wimby that was born into some French, and I don't know, he'd be like fencing or something. I don't know. What's a popular French sport? I don't even know. You never trust the French. I have a tough time. Even with Wimby, I love him. I love watching him play, but I don't trust the French at all. It's just a personal thing. I don't know. Just call it my sixth sense. The French, oof, you know, purveyors of democracy. It's like, come on, give me a break. Heresy, you mean? It's a joke. Wimby's a great player, but you know, it used to be that there were people like this, been people like this forever. You just didn't see them because there was no real institutional mechanism to usher them in and get them to where they need to be, get them seen by who they need to be seen by. So, you know, things, what I'm saying is industry, commercialization, there's a place for it. Just has to be rightly ordered. And for a long time, it hasn't been rightly ordered. Professional sports has replace faith in our culture. Professional sports and sports in America has replaced faith and religion, And then the sports has become, you know, more or less the dominated by money versus the sacred honor of the skill or the arena or the human dignity and the human being. And see, this is the important underlying cultural dichotomy is we currently find ourselves in a place where on one night, the entire world is fixated on this you know, 2-hour basketball game between the New York Knicks and the San Antonio Spurs, where none of those players would have been able to get to that point, that place, be it the NBA, it's the highest level, or the ability to perform and do the things they can do on that stage, on that night, if the sports world was dominated by this communist, egalitarian equity of outcome philosophy. See, and the truth, I talk about it all the time, and I guess as an athlete, as a lifelong athlete, the crisis of our culture is apparent to me because I can look back on my own life and the mentality that it takes to, one, become a high-level athlete. Even if you're an All-American in high school, I was an All-American in high school. I was All-American in college. I was, you know, drafted to the NBA, had some political differences with the NBA, as I still do now. But I played, you know, 2 professional seasons in Canada, was recruited to play internationally all across the world. I hesitated to go because, you know, I just don't want to go play in China. Sorry, I love basketball, but I don't love it enough to go play or go live in tyrannical communist CCP China. Or Tel Aviv, for that matter. They offered me to come play in Tel Aviv and for Maccabi Haifa on a number of occasions for around $50,000 to $60,000 a month, all expenses paid, tax-free, which is a great gig, a great living. They tell me Tel Aviv is like Miami in terms of its weather and the nightlife for a young man who's into that sort of thing. Tel Aviv is like, you know, the Miami of the Middle East. And I never went because something doesn't seem right, you know. And it's also about losing, you know, as great as the world is, as beautiful as some of these places are, and they're great people and cultures, and they should be proud of their culture and their part of the world, and they should defend it. They should defend the sovereignty of their nations and of their culture and their traditions. And intuitively, there's just something that we've lost about being American. So what did I do? I went to play in Canada. We should annex Canada. Okay, you heard it here for the 15th time. We should annex Canada because they've become way too communist and they're on our border. But it was just about as American as you could possibly imagine. That's right. They got an A there, here and there. But Canada is about as American as you could imagine. And I won two championships in the Canadian League, and I was MVP 1 year, scoring leader the next. Anyway, you couldn't get to a place like that even if you live by this insane, illogical equity of outcome that the liberals are trying to push all through American culture and the culture worldwide. The two are diametrically opposed. The universal basic income, universal health care, own nothing, be happy, drugs and video games as a remedy to the fourth industrial revolution, robotics, AI, and whatnot, the displacement of the human being in our civilization, that mentality versus the fanaticism that has made the NBA, the UFC, American professional sports down there in Texas. I was just in Texas. You got the World Cup and Team USA won their first game against Paraguay in the World Cup. Sports wouldn't be as big as sports has gotten commercially if any of these people who participated in it, let's say the athletes first and foremost, if any of the athletes believed in this insane, woke, egalitarian ideology. The two cultures are diametrically opposed. I mean, imagine telling Michael Jordan that the NBA should be equal. What? It's not going to be equal. There's nothing equal about Michael Jordan. And it does say something about genetics because, you know, when you're born 7'4" and your reach is, I don't know what Wimby's reach is, 9 feet, 10 feet or something stupid. There's nothing equal about that. And that's okay. But Jalen Brunson showed us last night, and then the thing I love the most about the New York Knicks winning is that they you know, you could, okay, if you're really a basketball person, you could say the San Antonio Spurs gave three games away because they were up 72% of the time. And in sports, there's this thing called time and possession. Usually the team that has the ball the most, usually the team that spends the most time ahead in a game or over the course of a number of games is the team that comes out victorious. It's the rule of possession. And it's true in soccer, it's true in football, it's true in basketball, it's true in hockey. The team that can kind of control and manage the possession usually is victorious. San Antonio spent 72% of this series ahead. So reasonably, they should have won. Why didn't they? They're young. They're immature. So they didn't understand when they got a lead exactly how to keep a lead. And, you know, part of that's coaching. Part of that's just the growing pains of being young players. But what you gotta love is that the New York Knicks is a team that's more or less a team full of guys who are underrated, undervalued, underpromoted. You take Karl Anthony Towns, who was like, you know, considered the second or third option here in Minnesota. Then you get to a guy like Jalen Brunson, who, and I love this about the series, you had one of the littlest guys in the league heart check one of the biggest players in NBA history. And he heart checked him. He did. He showed him. He said, I got the skill, the toughness, the grit, the know-how, the savvy to control this game, to navigate this game, to apply my skill in a way that's going to make my team victorious. And you just got to love that about sports. But there's nothing, you know, sort of woke LGBTQ, everybody's equal about what Jalen Brunson and the New York Knicks did last night. We're talking about that and much more here in the Belly of the Beast. I'm Royce White. This is the Alex Jones Network, live on Sunday night. Stay tuned.
Hi, folks. Doc Bigley here. And today we're going to get to know our H2O. Billy, what kind of water do you drink?
Why, tap water, of course. Ma says it keeps my teeth sparkly white.
I'm sorry to say it, Billy, but your mother is either plain ignorant or worse, a communist. Let me explain.
Tap water used to be safe to drink, but communist subversives in our government introduced fluoride into our nation's tap under the guise of dental health, when in reality, fluoride lowers your IQ, calcifies your pineal gland, and makes you susceptible to anti-capitalist mind viruses.
So you're telling me I'm a sap if I drink tap?
Yes, you are, Billy. Yes, you are. But don't despair. We've found a solution. Follow me. I'd like to tell you a tale of two frogs.
Frog number one has only ever drank unfiltered tap water, chock full of fluoride. Observe him listening to satanic music, abusing substances, and engaging in other perversions.
Look, Doc, they're trying to play leapfrog. They're pretty bad at it, though.
Avert your eyes, Billy. Let's continue.
Meanwhile, frog number two has only ever drank water that has been filtered for fluoride and other impurities. What a happy frog family.
Spill the secret, Doc. How do you get rid of the communist poisons?
With the new water filter system from the AlexJonesStore.com.
Say, Doc, may I have a glass?
Why, certainly. Well, that's just swell. No water in the water filter. Listen, I'm not mad at the crew, but I asked for real water in here 30 minutes ago and never got it.
Crew's in trouble again.